Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And if you could believe it, we missed our pre-show for UFC 321, unfortunately. You know, it's unfortunate we missed it, but I was busy last week, guys. I was hardly home at all. I had literally zero time to record with work and the commuting and just, you know, living my life downtown Chicago. So we are back to talk about UFC 321, which some people are calling the worst UFC pay-per-view of the year. I think it is the second worst, which doesn't really give it much credit whatsoever. But there were still some positives, despite the utter awfulness that was a majority of it. So we are going to be recapping everything that went down at UFC 321 on today's episode as well. We have a bunch of new UFC fights to talk to you guys about that have been announced over the last week or so. And then also a little bit of an NFL recap. We only have Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football left as of the time of recording this. So I will be talking about every other matchup that has gone down. Before that, I did awful in fantasy this week. I'm confirmed to win in at least one league. I'm confirmed to lose in four other leagues, and there's like two that are up in the air. So it has just been a rough week, rough Sunday, I will say, in terms of NFL. But other than that, I've been living a very fabulous time down here, and I'm ready to discuss a whole lot of UFC with you guys on today's episode. And then, yeah, once I really get into a routine, I'll be back to making sure I never miss another event to give you guys my predictions. But I only went 7-5 on picks, so it's not like I went 12-0, 13-0, and missed some giant thing. So without further ado, let's dive right on into it. Kicking us off with our first thing on today's episode, of course, new UFC fights. And I think I've got 8 new fights to discuss with you guys. None of them really high profile, but there are some fun ones amidst everything. So without further ado, kicking us off, we have a matchup in the men's welterweight division going down at UFC Qatar as Nicholas Dalby is finally back. He, of course, was knocked out by Randy Brown earlier this year in very brutal fashion. It is one of the nastiest flatline KOs we've seen all year. And he'll be taking on the UFC debutant Sagid Izgakamov. That is right. Sagid Izgakamov. I mean, this dude's got a wacky name. Let me just tell you, he's from Russia. He's 22-2 at 31 years of age. And yeah, this dude looks scary, to say the least. I don't know if he's going to end up being scary, but they're feeding him to 40-year-old Nicholas Dalby. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, my money's probably going to be with Sagid Izgakamov, however you say his name. But yeah, this dude looks like an absolute killing machine. That goes down November 22nd in Qatar. Matchup a week before it, UFC 322 in Madison Square Garden. Chipe Mariscal finally back, the man who's 5-0 in the UFC with wins over Morgan Tree, Jack Jenkins, and Pat Sabatini. We'll actually be rematching Pat Sabatini. That's right. These two fought before he was in the UFC, and now they are doing battle again. Pat, who is 7-2 in the UFC, is coming off a big win over Joe Henderson Brito last time out. But despite being 20-5, I got right with Chipe Machine Gun Mariscal. This dude has been on a killing spree. I'm just hoping we can get him up the rankings sooner rather than later. The dude is already 33 years old, and funny enough, his birthday is actually tomorrow. I'm recording this on 26th. He turns 33 on the 27th. So Machine Gun Mariscal, Pat Sabatini should be fun. Can Pat Sabatini get his lick back after Mariscal had beat him before the UFC? Going to the last pay-per-view of the year, UFC 323 has a very fun prelim bout as Edson Barboza is finally back after having his 30th professional bout last time out. I can't even remember who he fought. To be honest, I feel bad. I have no idea who he fought last. But you know who he is taking on? Jalen Turner. Jalen Turner's back. I knew his retirement wouldn't last long. He is back before you know it. He was, of course, submitted by Ignacio Bahomadez earlier this year and was like, I'm going to retire. And then, of course, unretired. So Jalen Turner taking on Edson Barboza. Jalen Turner is shockingly 7-6 in the UFC. The dude has way more potential than we've seen. He's only 30. As for Barboza, he's 39. So his time is coming to an end. This is just another great lightweight matchup that I am very excited to see on the prelims of UFC 323. Next up, going down on the same card, UFC 323, Ibo Aslan is back. The dude who came in, starched Anton Trkulcic, starched Rafael Sequeira, comes in with a ton of momentum, has just hit a rough patch. You know, he, of course, lost to Billy Alicana, lost to Ian Kulaba. He was supposed to be one of the bigger rising light heavyweights this year and ended up being not that good. And they're giving him a tough person to take on in his debut. The man who had a 30-second knockout on the Contender Series, Ivo Baranowski. Ivo Baranowski put Muhammad Ali out cold in the opening 30 seconds of their matchup. And, you know, he gets a good opponent in Ivo Aslan. The main thing you're going to see this is height goes to Ivo Aslan. So size-wise, Ivo is going to have some height over Ivo. But Ivo proved against Muhammad Ali that doesn't matter. This is a fun matchup. UFC 323 is just loaded top to bottom. They were just throwing any other fight. Oh, you haven't fought in this year? How would you like to fight this person? Oh, you also haven't fought in this year? Okay, you go fight this person. Fantastic. And I love seeing the quick turnarounds for Dana White's Contender Series fighters. I really do. Sometimes these guys don't debut for a full year. I'm glad to see the activity. That one should be fun. One another new matchup coming on UFC Vegas 111, November 8th. Louisiana Santos, number 15th ranked women's bantamweight, will be taking on Melissa Croden. Melissa won her debut over Tanera Lisboa last weekend in Canada, and she's already turning around. Wow, this is crazy. She replaces Darius Linikova, who was originally slated to face Louisiana Santos. Louisiana did pick up a win over Juliana Miller in her last bout, but yeah, great opportunity here for Melissa Croden, and I think I'm a ride with the Canadian in this one, especially after having a successful debut, dominated Lisboa. I got to take her here. We need new women's bantamweights. That is one of the worst divisions in the UFC. UFC Vegas 110, which we'll actually be covering in a few days here, going down November 1st, has a short notice replacement as the undefeated Rafael Estevam is unfortunately unable to compete. In taking his place is Cody Durden. Cody Durden, man, hit or miss. Dude's either getting a highlight win or getting put out on his face, which it's usually the latter, sadly. But hey, he's taking on Alan Nascimento. Alan is 3-1 in the UFC, 21-6 professionally. Inactivity has hurt him, but he's here, he's ready, and this is a decent catchweight bout at 130. It's basically a flyweight bout. These two are natural flyweights. Cody Durden, best of luck in this one, but might ride with Alan Nascimento. Two more fights to bring to you guys. First up, UFC Vegas 112 on December 13th, the final event of the year. Joanderson Brito is back. Finally, Joanderson Brito is back. Fun fact, he holds a win over Diego Lopez, if you didn't know that. He was unfortunately halted last time out by Pat Sabatini, but he's back to take on the gun, Melsik Bagdasarian. Melsik was knocked out cold by Gene Silva and then just decided to never fight again. I don't know. Dude, he's 8-3, hasn't fought since earlier in the year. So, you know, fought on one of the first few cards of the year, now fighting on the very last one. I'm riding with Joanderson Brito in this one, but this is a very high-level, close matchup, and I would give probably grappling to Brito and striking to Melsik Bagdasarian. And then the last matchup to bring to you guys, UFC Qatar has another debutant as Nurullo Aliyev, the 10-0 Tajikistan fighter, welcomes Shamrock. That is right. Shamrock, who is a 12-1 fighter coming over from, I don't even know where, but I feel like I've heard of him. He trains with Paddy Pimblett, and, you know, with a 12-1 record fighting out of England/Ireland, you know, definitely going to be coming in with some momentum. But Nurullo Aliyev, he's looked good through his first two UFC wins, taking out Rafael Alves and Joe Selecki, who are not easy guys to put away. So, I mean, tough matchup, really is. Nurullo was born in 2000. Shem was born in 1993. So age advantage will go to Shamrock, but that usually depends. Sometimes the younger fighters don't do as well. I know there's a statistic about that, but I think there's something about how younger fighters aren't always the most successful. It really is. When you look at this like 20 to 30 range and 30 to 40 range, there's always like a demographic of which age fighters are in their prime at. So I don't know, but UFC Qatar is easily looking to be the best fight night of the entire year. I really hope it turns out that way, but Hey, we'll have to see. Those are all your new UFC fights. You're not going to be getting any 2026 news until we reach the end of the year. So just enjoy what we have for now. 2025 has been a very good year. I'm actually excited to recap it coming up here in about 2 months or so. So stay tuned for that. But without further ado, let's get into our NFL week number 8 recap. Wow, we're already on week 8. Of the NFL season. It is crazy to think. I had an awful week in fantasy. I don't even want to talk about fantasy, but what I will talk about, you know, right now is just a recap of all the matchups, the current standings. I mean, guys, I was just a horrible fantasy manager at the end of the day. Like, I can't really be bad at anyone except myself. So without further ado, here's your official week 8 recap of the NFL season. Now, we kicked off the week with the Vikings and the Chargers, and to my dismay, the Vikings really did nothing. I mean, 37-10, Chargers destroy us, and it was abysmal. It was awful. I mean, the Vikings are just in the gutter. I don't know if we're ever going to win. We're never winning a Super Bowl. At this point, I need to stop giving any time to the NFL. And honestly, after this year, I might just be done talking about the NFL on this podcast because I just don't know if it even freaking matters. This was just an awful performance for the Vikings. But the Chargers, you know what? Good for them. They're 5-3 back in the win column. And they had some very good fantasy performances in this game. Justin Herbert got 25. Ladd McConkey, 20. Vidal had 19. And even the rookie Gadsden, the new breakout tight end, he had himself a little 18.7 piece. So good for him. For the Vikings, they fall to 3-4 and are the worst team. And the NFC North lost 2 straight, just not looking good. Justin Jefferson had 14. Jordan Addison had 11. That's it. That is all the Vikings had to show for themselves. And, I mean, this was just boring. Boring game. Heading into halftime, it was 17-3. Like, it's just an awful performance from Minnesota. Carson Wentz goes for 144 yards, a touchdown, and a pick, and he looked to be in pain. Like, his arm, something was wrong with that. They brought Max Brosman in for, like, the final drive or two, and he had 13 yards on 3 passes. Jordan Mason was labeled the backup for some reason, and Aaron Jones was the lead back. He put up 15 yards on 5 carries. Just abysmal. For the Chargers, Herbert, 227 yards, 3 touchdowns. I don't even remember him throwing a pick. Guess the Vikings got a pick. Vidal, 117 yards rushing. We got Huddy. Ladd McConkey, 6 catches, 88 yards, and a touchdown. Good for the Chargers, I suppose, as a Vikings fan. Just pain. One of the best games of the week, and as I actually look at all of our games, this was easily the best game of the week so far. Jets and Bengals decide to have themselves a little shootout, and the Jets finally have their first win of the season. That's right, the Jets have finally won, and they are finally no longer the worst team in the NFL. That is now the Titans, which I guess they have more losses. They're 1-7. Okay, the Jets are still technically, but we all know they aren't actually. They pick up their first win on the road in Cincinnati. Brees Hall, 32 fantasy points, sitting on my bench in every single league. Justin Fields, 20, and Isaiah Davis had 17. Chase Brown had 25, Joe Flacco, 24, who I dropped for Kirk Cousins, and Jamar Chase had 21. But yeah, this was just a shootout, and by the way, Jets were down 14 points with 10 minutes left, but before you know it, they rally, they pull it together, and Brees Hall passes to Mason Taylor to seal the deal. Very impressive stuff for the Jets, getting their first win of the year. As for the Bengals, man, just another team that's fallen off, and it's been rough. 3-5 record now, but somehow still second in the AFC North. The AFC North is not that good this year. For the Jets, Justin Fields, 244 yards and a touchdown. Brees Hall rushes for 133 yards and catches 2 touchdowns and even passed the touchdown, which is just insane. For the Bengals, Jamar Chase, 12 catches, 91 yards. Impressive stuff there. T. Higgins, 1 catch of the game was a 44-yard touchdown. Good for him. Joe Flacco, 233 yards and 2 touchdowns. All I can say for Joe Flacco is he is better than Jake Browning. So, Jets finally in the win column, and we no longer have an undefeated team or a winless team. So, everyone has in the win column and the loss column. Good for being even. Next up, Bears and Ravens, and I picked up the Bears defense, and I regret it because the Bears freaking suck. The Bears are actually awful. I'm on a crash out, by the way, for NFL this week, if you can't tell. Ravens win, 2-5 record for them now, yet to win on the road, funny enough, as they beat the Bears at home. Bears move to 4-3 and are just one game better than the Vikings. Romo Odunze, 18 points for the Ravens. Derrick Henry had 19. And oh, Tyler Huntley, 16 points was still better than the man I started. And you know what? Even DJ Moore was getting like 11 fantasy points. This game sucked. Both teams are just awful. Bears are really bad. Might I say that? Caleb Williams, 285 yards and a pick. Just as awful. Romo Odunze is a good star, though. It's clear they have the team chemistry. For Baltimore, Huntley is clearly better than Cooper Rush. And Derrick Henry put up a 2-touchdown game. Good for him. Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 63 yards. Nice work is all I'm going to say. And Kolar caught a touchdown on National Tight End Day, which I didn't even know that it was. So good stuff there. Next up, Dolphins and their little drought as they defeat the Falcons 34-10 in Atlanta. So I legit have no idea what to make of the Falcons anymore. They are just a random, you know, roll the eight ball every week and see how they do. They're 3-4. They've lost two straight, and I hate them so much. I hate Kirk Cousins a lot, too. I'm so sorry, Kirk. What happened to you? The fall off is generational. For the Dolphins, they moved to 2-6. Good for them. All I can say, Tua, 24 points, Jalen Waddle, 20, and Devin Achane, 20. It was a three-man wrecking crew from those two boys. For the Falcons, Kyle Pitts have 14.9. That's it. That is all you get from the Falcons at the end of the day. They got a 6-yard Ty Allgeier rushing touchdown with 5 minutes left. Just a little gimme there at the end. But yeah, really good game for Tua, 205 yards, 4 tutties on only 6 incompletions. Waddle, 99 yards in a tutty. Washington, 36 yards in a tutty. Achane, 24 yards in a tutty, combined with 67 yards rushing. And Ollie Gordon, that is right, caught himself a little 20-yard touchdown. Immaculate. For the Falcons, Kirk Cousins throws for 173 yards. Bijan rushes for 25 yards. And that is all about it. Falcons are bad. And I think I'm going on a little no-picking spree here. I'm never picking the Bengals rest of the year, never picking the Bears, never picking the Falcons. I hate all of them. Next up, the Bills. The Bills. Unfortunately, I played Josh Allen this week, so that made me a little depressed. But Bills, 5-2 now, back in the winning column. James Cook goes for 33 points in fantasy. He had himself a day. Josh Allen, run of the mill, 23 from him. Absolute beauty. And Shakir, 20 points. I wonder if you started him this week. You'd have done well. For the Panthers, Tatori McMillan, 16.9 was the only good performance. And yeah, just awful all around for the Panthers. They couldn't even make extra points, for goodness sakes. Josh Allen, 163 yards and a touchdown. He also rushed for 2 touchdowns. James Cook, 216 yards and 2 touchdowns. Shakir, 6 catches, 88 yards and a touchdown. Good work for all of those boys. Keon Coleman, fantasy owner, still hoping that he gets back to his week one ways. For Carolina, Andy Dalton was in with Bryce Young being injured, and he just looked awful. When we talk about like selling games, like NBA betting rigged, it looked like he was like playing to lose. Like, and I think he was actually trying just so bad. For some reason, Chubb Hubbard had more carries than Rico Dowdle, and Rico Dowdle had more points. I don't understand why we don't just give Rico Dowdle. You strap a rocket to Rico Dowdle, he's clearly the better back than Chubb Hubbard. Tatori McMillan, 7 catches, 99 yards, was the only one doing anything. Yeah, rough day for the Panthers. Panthers will move to 4-4. Still second in the NFC South. It is funny how that works. It really is at the end of the day. But yeah, good stuff for them, I suppose. For the 49ers and Texans, 49ers lose. I don't understand NFL. I'm done giving my life. This is actually, you know, might be the last time we talk about NFL, or I'm just going to condense it into a 5-minute segment, for goodness sakes. But yeah, Texans were in prime form for their matchup with the 49ers. Texans are now 3-4, back in the win column. They've only given up 103 points this year. They have a very good defense, I just realized. For the 49ers, a team that you would think would win, they are now 5-3. It's third best in the NFC West. The NFC West is kind of nasty this year. Funny enough, the rest of the NFC West was on bye this week. Seahawks, Rams, and Cardinals. I wonder why the 49ers were. Huh. Mac Jones, 18 points. The quarterback I could have chosen. Then Kirk Cousins. George Kittle, 14. Christian McCaffrey, 9.8. Wasn't getting that active today. CJ Stroud had 17. Xavier Hutchinson, 17. And Woody Barks, 15. For the 49ers, Mac Jones, 193 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. I mean, there you have it for the Texans. CJ Stroud, 30 for 39, 318 yards and 2 touchdowns, did very well. And, you know, Nick Chubb actually had more rushes than Woody Marks, but Woody Marks had more yards. Funny how that works. With no Nico Collins, no Tank Dell, it's no problem for the Texans as they dominate. And no Joe Mixon. I forgot about Joe Mixon. He's actually on this team. I wonder what will happen when he comes back with Woody Marks. And what do we have? Two more games for the 12 o'clock slate. Eagles blow out the Giants and still don't pass to Devontae Smith. I hate the NFL. I hate it. I really do. Saquon breakout game, 33 fantasy points, you know, revenge game on point. But the biggest story here, Cam Scatabout out for the year. Definitely tore some ligaments in his leg. Very sad. Very sad. I always like seeing Scatabo out there. But funny enough, the Giants moved to 0-5 on the road this year. They are 2-6 and have only won games at home. For the Eagles, 6-2, two-game winning streak. They're easily the best team in the NFC. Buccaneers are right on their tail, though. Jackson Dart had 19 fantasy points, and Cam Scatabo had 10 before his season ended. Jalen Hurts had 17. Dallas Goedert went off. He caught two touchdowns, 17.8 fantasy points. Good for him. But yeah, this was a great game for Jalen Hurts overall, 179 yards and four touchdowns, and Saquon, 150 yards, one touchdown on the ground. Also had four catches, for one of which landed him a touchdown. So, you know, Eagles season rolls along. They're probably going to be the favorite again in the NFC. And honestly, sometimes when they lose, like the Broncos loss, like the Giants loss, I mean, it just makes you think, like, how in the world is this team ever going to lose? Because 38 points, they were very dominant. And the final noon game, we had the Patriots and the Browns. And the Patriots are being very sneakily good this year. Patriots win 32-13, no issue. They're 6-2, five-game winning streak. They are in the running. They are in the running this year, and I don't even know how. They are just dominant. Drake May, 26 fantasy points. Boutte, 16. And Matt Collins, 15. For the Browns, Fannin Jr. gets 18.4. And Njoku, 13.7. So tight ends were thriving. And Dylan Gabriel, 11.5, had more points than Kirk Cousins. Make it make sense. Browns are 2-6, are yet to win on the road, and are just awful. Start Shedeur Sanders. What do we have to lose? We have nothing to lose. Start Shedeur Sanders. But yeah, dominant work from the Pats in this one. I mean, just terrible. Terrible for the Browns. Dylan Gabriel, two touchdowns, two picks. Judkins held to only 19 yards on the ground. Fannin Jr., 6 catches, 62 yards and a tutty. David Njoku, 4 catches, 37 yards and a tutty. Good work. Jerry Jeudy, not even a catch. Poor fellow. Should have stayed in Denver. Drake May, 282 yards, 3 tutties and a pick, was on point. Trey Anderson, 75 yards, overtook the backfield from Ramondre Stevenson. And yeah, decent work all around. Stephon Diggs caught a touchdown. You remember him? That's right. Stephon Diggs, the former Viking, former Bill. He is still on the Patriots. Funny enough, I forget about him every week. I actually think I have him in a fantasy football league. Get into our last three games we're going to discuss here today for the 3:30 slate. Buccaneers destroy the Saints 23-3. I was really high on the Saints this week, and they let me down. Negative knowledge for Zach this week. Saints fall to 1-7. And yeah, they're bad. They are very, very bad. Buccaneers move up to 6-2 and are tied for first in the NFC. Actually, yeah, they are tied for first. I just wanted to double check. But Buccaneers getting it done in this one. Their defense was the star. 25 effing points. Wow. Wow, their defense was on point in this one. And the kicker, McLaughlin, 17. Are you freaking kidding me? They had a 3-yard pick six in the first, and you know what? They allowed a field goal in the second. That was all the Saints had to show for it. Baker, 152 yards, was otherwise held in check overall. Sean Tucker actually overtook the backfield from Rashad White. Funny enough. Ibuka had 3 catches, and that was it. Other than that, nothing else going on for the Bucs. They're first in their division. Good work. For the Saints, Spencer Rattler is benched, and in comes Tyler Shough, I think his name is. And funny enough, they literally put identical stats. Shough, 120 yards and a pick, and for Spencer Rattler, 136 yards and a pick. It's just funny how that works. Kamara, 21 yards. I thought he was going to have a good game. Rashid Shaheed, 9 catches, 75 yards. I thought he was going to have a good game. He was getting targeted like crazy, though. So at least I had that somewhat right. You know, I'll give myself props for that, I guess. But I mean, come on, just... Oh, tough showing, really tough showing out in the league for the day. But yeah, we'll see how the rest of the season pans out. But Buccaneers are going to be a force to be reckoned with come playoff time. Next up, Colts demolish the Titans. No upsets, no fun. Colts are the best team in the NFL with a 7-1 record, 4 straight wins. And, you know, funny enough, they're actually 5-0 at home. Good for them. Titans move to 1-7 now. And yes, they are officially the worst team in the league. Oh, I can actually say that. They have lost 3 straight games. Cam Ward didn't look too awful here. 12 fantasy points for him. Tajay Spears with 17 was the main man. JT, Jonathan Taylor, 37 fantasy points. This guy's insane. All right, come on. Jonathan Taylor is the best running back in the league. It is crazy. Michael Pittman had 23 and Daniel Jones had 23. Wow. Touchdowns galore. Not one, not two, not three, not four, but five touchdowns from the Colts today. Cam Ward, 259 yards, touchdown and a pick on the ground. Tony Pollard, 44 yards, but it's Tajee Spears' 59 at Tutty, which stole the show. Best wide receiver, Dick, D-I-K-E, 7 catches, 93 yards. I have no idea who that is, to be honest. For the Colts, Daniel Jones, 272 yards and 3 touchdowns. It's crazy the Vikings could have had him. It really is. Jonathan Taylor, 153 yards on only 12 carries for 2 touchdowns. This man is nasty. Pittman, Warren, Downs, Pierce, all tearing it up. This team is crazy. And yeah, I have them beating the Chiefs to win the AFC Championship. I'm just kidding. But actually, you know what? It maybe could happen. And the last game, Broncos and Cowboys. I failed to predict this as well, but look out for the Broncos. 6-2, 5 straight wins, undefeated at home. They're looking very nasty. For the Cowboys, they are just so hit or miss. 3-4-1, back in the losing column. It makes no sense. Javonte Williams, 17.9. Sadly, Troy Franklin caught 2 tutties. I played both of them. RJ Harvey had a good game. Bo Nix, to be honest, I could care less. Why do we even care about the NFL? Like, why? There is no appeal about the NFL anymore. We all know it's just a corporate greed machine. It, you know, causes me to spend money on bets. You know, the only reason I'm going to watch the NFL from now on is to win bets. That's the only reason I'm going to do it. So then I can actually win money and I can actually stick it to the corporation. So yeah, there's your little NFL recap. As you can tell, I've had a day. I've had a day, you know, dealing with things, I would say. But you know what? We're just going to move on from all of that. That'll be the last NFL talk we have for the night. But Packers are clearly beating the Steelers. I would have picked the Steelers. And for Chiefs and Commanders, I'm hoping that Patrick Mahomes has a good game, but not too good of a game. And honestly, Jackson, Kroski, Merritt, do your worst to the Chiefs. Do your worst, dominate them, run all over them, do whatever you please. But yeah, that's all we have for the NFL. Let's get into our little UFC 321 recap because, yeah, there's a lot to talk about on that front in a more positive tone, I will say. Alrighty, now getting into our UFC 321 recap. Let me just say, you can always tell how a card is going to go from how it starts. And this one definitely started off.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Very slow. The energy was just not there to kick off the UFC 321. And I honestly don't think it got going until that Walter Walker heel hook. But kick off the card, Mizuki taking on Jacqueline Amorim. And you have an underdog cash right off the rip. Mizuki absolutely humbling Jacqueline Amorim. You know, round one comes around. Jacqueline, 2-for-2 on takedowns, going for a submission attempt, looking kind of decent on the feet, leaning more towards Mizuki. Round two comes around. Mizuki flips it. She lands 2 of her own takedowns. She's beating her up on the ground. 3 minutes of control time. And round three, Mizuki's piecing up Jacqueline on the feet. 35 significant strikes to 10, 80 total strikes to 20, even knocks her down and gets 3.5 minutes of control time. So Mizuki, utter domination as a plus 350 underdog, getting her first win back since 2023. And now she's 3-1 in the UFC. 2-fight win streak, 60-6 record. Good for her. As for Jacqueline Amorim, this was a prospect a lot of people were high on. She had gone 4-1 before this fight, all 4 of those wins finishes, picked up a big finish of Poliana Viana earlier in April, and now just kind of at the bottom of the ladder. So women's strawweight division, this can kind of go anywhere, if I'm being honest. I mean, there wasn't really anything outer worldly here, but Jacqueline Amorim, oh gosh, I don't even know what to do with her next, if I'm being honest, I mean, Mizuki will probably fight someone of a bit higher class. And as for Jacqueline Amorim, it'd probably just be a guessing game of who she could fight next. Gosh, I honestly couldn't tell you. I couldn't really tell you. No, these are two unranked women strawweights. Had Jacqueline won, she'd have been toward the rankings. But maybe Mizuki gets a ranked opportunity. Currently in at number 15 is Denise Gomez. She's taking on Tisha Pennington coming up. A matchup between the 13th and 15th ranked woman. The loser of that can take on Mizuki. As for Jacqueline Amorim, I don't know. Test her against some other unranked woman strawweights and see how she bounces back. Next up, flyweight division, and Mitch Raposo, Aslak Maksum, about as dull as you can get. Now, the one things I can point out here is that Aslak Maksum is relentless when shooting takedowns, and Mitch Raposo can land some clean shots. Now, did any do any real damage? No, but somehow Mitch Raposo gets it done. Scorecards were kind of wonky, 30-26, 29-27, and 29-27, but that is because Aslak Maksum had a very blatant fence grab. I mean, this dude is about to get put in a guillotine, just grabs the cage, which saved the fight. But yeah, I mean, 7 of 19 on takedowns for 5.5 minutes of control time. Mitch outstrikes him on the feet, 30-19 significantly. This was just boring at the end of the day. And for Aslak Maksum, here's a guy who came into the UFC 15-0. First fight was a split decision win, and since then, three straight decision losses. So I say we cut Aslak Maksum. Best case scenario, we feed someone coming off of the Contender Series to fight him. But other than that, I mean, just really rough showing from him in this matchup. As for, you know, your man Mitch Raposo here, first win in the UFC, he had previously gone 0-2, also had lost in the Contender Series, also had lost in the Ultimate Fighter, but as a +265 underdog, opens the card with a win. So, good stuff for Mitch Raposo. As far as the men's flyweight division goes, there is a unlimited number of options for him to do. I'd say the loser of Tagir Limbekov and Kaoichi Horiguchi could be a potential option for him. I mean, you know, it depends how high level we want to go with him. I actually think that is too high of a level, but Clayton Carpenter is on a little two fight skid. I think Clayton Carpenter, Mitch Raposo could be the next matchup that we go with. But yeah, good win in this one for Mitch Raposo, and for Aslak Maksum, I'm fairly confident they will cut him because there's just nothing left to really do with Aslak Maksum in the UFC. Also getting cut, I presume, will be Chris Barnett, who on my scorecard was 29-24 by Hamdi Abdul-Hawab. This was insane. Hamdi now gets a back of the head shot, so loses a point in round one. But other than that, I mean, this was just all Hamdi all day. And Hamdi came back and said he broke his hand in round two. That's why he stopped throwing. But honestly, he was just destroying Chris Barnett. 99 significant strikes to 18, 170 total strikes to 28, 9 of 14 on takedowns for 11 minutes of control time, including 4 minutes, 13 seconds in round number two. Crazy work from Hamdi Abdul-Hawab. He'll improve to 7-1 and bounces back from his loss earlier in the year against Muhammad Usman. So Hamdi back in the win column. He called out Walter Walker. Walter Walker called out Hamdi. That's the next fight you're going to make if you want to do that. As for Chris Barnett, I mean, two-fight losing streak. The man has gone 2-4 in the UFC, and with this showing, it's rough. So Chris Barnett, sadly going to get cut. And as for Hamdi, probably going to take on Walter. That would be funny, Mitch Raposo versus Hamdi Abdul-Hawab. But no, probably going to take on Walter Walker. We'll mention that in a second. I would actually prefer he take on the man who lost there, Luis Sutherland, but we can get to that in a second, because before that, we had probably the second best fight on the prelims, and I say that in a good way. That is in terms of ones that went the distance. In our fourth fight, Nathaniel Wood took on Jose Delgado, and this was a 29-28 across the board masterclass. These two went to war. Now, round one, Jose Delgado, I thought he put Nathaniel Wood's lights out. I have no idea how Nathaniel Wood not only survived round one, but fought his way back. This dude was almost knocked out cold, is getting hit with punches, brings it back to the feet, is able to survive, then drops Jose Delgado. I mean, Nathaniel Wood, you doggy, changed his nickname from The Prospect to something else. The UFC doesn't even have an update. I think it was like the Last Real Englishman or something. It was something, Last Real King or something. It was something crazy. And round one goes by, you're like, how did he survive? Round two, lands a takedown, outstrikes him 36-29, and I think everyone had it all tied up heading to round three. Swing round, 39-7 strikes to 37 in favor of Nathaniel Wood. Also landed a takedown to really, you know, mix it in a little bit, and he gets the close decision victory. It could have gone either way. Some people were saying robbery, but I picked Nathaniel Wood, so I was biased. That's three straight for Nathaniel Wood. Had he not lost two straight kind of bogus decisions, this man would have been on a 9-fight winning streak. But make that three for Nathaniel Wood, and he's going to get a ranked opponent in his next contest. Who will that be? Dan Ige, Giga Chikadze, or the loser of Steve Garcia and David Onama? Those are three options next for Nathaniel Wood. I would really like to see a Giga Chikadze fight. If I'm being honest, that's the next fight I want to see, because Jose Delgado, I think, should also get a ranked shot. Dude, he's 10-2. His other fights have been absolute bangers. I would love to see him run it with Dan Ige, to be honest. And actually, the more I think about it, I want Nathaniel Wood, Dan Ige, and Jose Delgado, Giga Chikadze. Now that I think about it, I'm actually going to flip those, and that's what I'm going to go with. But Nathaniel Wood, +130 underdog, hits it on the money. This was a close fight, and honestly, it kind of sucks we ran this now. I wish we would have ran this when these two were ranked, and it could have been its own fight night main event. Very fun stuff from Nathaniel Wood and Jose Delgado. Next up, we had a little break from all this boring decisions. You know, not to be fair, Nathaniel Wood and Jose Delgado was pretty entertaining, but we need a finish, and Walter Walker does it again. Performance bonus for him here. He gets his fourth straight heel hook victory in round number one. How is he doing it, bro? How is Walter Walker doing it? And oh man, I love it. I love it. I find it hilarious that he just keeps spamming heel hooks, but this one, back and forth against the debuting Louis Sutherland, eventually gets him up against the cage, is able to land himself a little trip takedown, then amidst the grappling, they're barely 30 seconds on the mat, goes in for the heels hook and locks it in, and Louis Sutherland spins around and gets caught really deep in it, and he taps. Great work for Walter Walker. This is the first time Louis Sutherland has been finished in the UFC. Will Louis be back? Yeah. You know, there's going to be a little spree of new heavyweights coming into the UFC. They'll feed him someone come off a Namus Contreras series. I even think Hamdi and Louis Sutherland would make for a nice little slugfest heavyweight, hopefully giving us a knockout. But Walter Walker, man, I don't know if he can fight Hamdi Abdullah, because he's kind of earned a ranked shot. He was ranked 15th. This dude is just trying to beef his record, which, to be fair, he's 16-1. Like, this dude is nasty now, or 15-1, my bad, but two straight performance bonuses off of these heel hooks, and if it's up to me, you know, there's always Mick Parkin at 13, Ty Tuivasa being ranked 11 makes no sense, and dare I say the 10th ranked Marcin Tybura, but I don't think Walter Walker wants to speedrun heavyweight at all, so let's keep feeding him bums, he'll keep locking him in heel hooks, because this man is on a generational run in the heavyweight division. Of all the awful heavyweights we have, Walter Walker is a nice break from the mediocrity otherwise known, because Louis Sutherland, Hamdi Abdulhuab, Chris Barnett just not cut out to make it in this division. So great work for Walter. Another heel hook, another performance bonus. This dude's a legend. Him and his brother Johnny, just the greatest brother duo in the UFC, right behind the Diaz brothers, of course. Next up, your fight of the night. This was a bloodbath. Ludwig Klein, Matheus Rebecca. Another weird fight, you know, because round one, Ludwig Klein getting the better of Matheus, defending five takedowns, outstriking him 25-21, bloodying him up with a cut. Round one goes to Ludwig Klein. Round two really dials it up, 38-7 strikes to 21, getting it done. Now, round one was much closer than round two in favor of Ludwig Klein, but round three comes around. Matheus brings him to the ground, is bloodying him up with punches, with elbows, outstrikes him 70-24, and it's just weird. Just weird. Matheus Rebecca clearly wins round number three at the end of the day, 10-8 on two judges' scorecards, but the majority decision does go to Ludwig Klein, so Ludwig Klein, great win there. Only loss in his last six is to Matheus Gamrot. And actually, last six, scratch that. This man is gone. Wow. He had a draw in 2023, but other than that, 7-1-1 in his last nine. So Ludwig Klein, ready for a little ranked shot here in the lightweight division. I think Mauricio Ruffy. Mauricio Ruffy versus Ludwig Klein. Let's run it. That is a great fight overall. As for Matheus Rebecca, I guess we can't give him a ranked shot. And oddly, this man is on a two-fight losing streak, but his last three fights have been Fight of the Nights. And to be fair, the Diego Ferreira fight should have won Fight of the Night had that Derek Lewis and Alan Nascimento card not had Trey Waters versus Billy Ray Goff. So that's just something little there. But yeah, this dude has had just utter wars his last four fights. Matheus Rebecca, let's give him a break. Let's give him a break. Let's have him fight Nasrat Haqparast when he comes back. We're going to mention him in two fights because I think Matusareke deserves a break. But Luvin Klein versus Mauricio Ruffy, let's make that fight. Mauricio Ruffy kind of struggled with the grappling of Benoit Saint-Denis. Also similar here for Luvin Klein, struggling with the grappling of Matusareke. Just a match made in heaven. So great work for Luvin Klein. Majority decision fight of the night. It was the best fight of the evening. Next up, we had Ikram Alkhazarov taking on the Iron Turtle, Jun Young Park, and we saw Ikram come out with Khabib in his corner, and I was like, okay, Ikram means business, but what I learned is that business means grappling. This man has not grappled ever in his UFC run so far, and decides to go 5 of 7 on takedowns to outgrapple Jun Young Park. All three rounds, two takedowns, one takedown, two takedowns, and to be fair, Jun Young Park was actually getting the better of him significantly on the feet in rounds 2 and 3, but at the end of the day, every round went to Ikram Alkhazarov. Two straight wins now in 2025. And I guess he gets a ranked opponent now. This was a very unsatisfying win. I really thought this would be a round one knockout. But Roman Dolidze is right there at number 12. Jerry Cannonier at 10. You even got Paulo Costa in there at 13. Winner of Marvin Vettori and Bruno Ferreira. Also an option. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's kind of a mid fight. Mediocre fight. Ikram outstrikes him 91-78 significantly. Getting it done. For Jun Young, this snaps his little two-fight streak, but other than that, I mean, 7-2 in his last nine. I still think he's very talented. He's getting up there in age, though, so mid-30s. We'll see where he goes from here in the men's middleweight division. There's always going to be options at the end of the day on who he could take on. I know Andre Munez did just lose to Edmund Shabazian. Edmund's on a little run. Don't know if I really want to run that fight. I don't know if they're going to cut Andre Petrovsky, but if we want to get Jun Young Park back in the win category, someone like Andre Petrovsky, Gerald Meerschaert could be options. We'll have to see. Shop around some middleweights to really handpick someone. But yeah, good win for Ikram here, just stylistically, but overall very boring. Like, I'm legit trying to drag this out. I have nothing more to say. Ikram wins. Ranked opponent coming up next. Then we got into the final prelim, and people are calling it the greatest knockout of the year, and honestly, I'm kind of with them here. Quinlan Sakyan knocks out Nasrat Haqparast, and no one saw this coming. I know these two were both favorites. Minus 115, minus 105. It was close. But I didn't realize how nasty Quinlan Sakyan is. 2 minutes and 30 seconds is all it takes for him to get his fourth career knockout, seventh career finish, moves to 10-1, 3-0, and on the year. And honestly, Quinlan Sakyan might be my rookie of the year. I mean, two round one knockouts. Win over Yanel Ashmaz. I mean, when I look around the rankings, I'm not really seeing like how Carlos Prates was last year. You know, I mean, Gene Silva also a great run last year. Kind of had a breakout year this year. But as I'm looking around at all of our men's rankings, there really isn't anyone that broke in just this year after debuting. Rare Day Ritter did debut, despite how bad he did, in 2024. So as of right now, this nasty knockout, Quinlan Sakyan might be my rookie of the year in 2025. But yeah, a nasty win, really nasty win. And no one's done this to Nasrat Haqparast. Literally no one. He was knocked out by Drew Dober in 2020. Even that wasn't as bad as this one. This snaps his 5-fight winning streak, which really sucks for him. But Quinlan Sakyan, getting a name next. Getting a name. I like Grant Dawson at 14. Good test there in the grappling. But yeah, Quinlan Sakyan stealing the show. Him, Walter Walker, Luvin Klein, Matusareke, and Thinkingwood Jose Delgado. Thankfully for those guys, the prelims were entertaining. But other than that, just a lot of boring decisions. And that led us into the main card where, thankfully, we started things with a bang as Azamat Mirzakhanov taking on Alexander Rakic in the men's light heavyweight division. Azamat, round one knockout, 10 over the 7. He'll be ranked number 6, in my opinion, come Tuesday morning when the rankings update. It'd be a great win for Azamat. His 12th career knockout, 13th career finish. He moves to 16-0 and is a beautiful 7-0 or 6-0 in the UFC. Also one in the contender series, might I add you, with all of his wins but one coming by finish. Azamat, dude, so nasty. And funny enough, I was on a walk because it was nice out Saturday when this was going down, and I'm watching on my phone, and I was kind of just like fantasizing in my head. I'm like, because there had been like this little, like, I don't know if it was a low blow or an eye poke, but the ref had stopped it real quickly. They had been clinching, and I was kind of thinking, I was like, I could just feel like Azamat just like one piping him down the middle and Alexander going down. Sure enough, right when the next sequence begins, he literally pops him with a jab, down he goes, one little follow-up punch, that's it. Dude, I was like, no way. I literally just like manifested that. Or like, not actually that, but just like thought of it. It just came to fruition. So Ozma, you nasty, nasty bugger, going to be ranked 7 or 6 coming Tuesday morning, and big fight coming up next. At the end of the day, you know, it's going to be Jamahal Hill at 6, depending where he's at. I could even see Khalil Roundtree Jr., winner of Jan Blachowicz and Bogdan Guskov, another option. And, you know, follow-up of, I could even see Magomed Ankalaev, to be honest. Like, there's a lot of crazy stuff that's going to go down in the light heavyweight division, but Ozma has a top 5 name next for him on his menu. Now, for Alexander Rakic, this sucks. This really sucks. This dude is never the same since getting injured against Jan Blachowicz. This is 4 straight losses for him. Hasn't gotten a finish since 2019. And yeah, really rough. Really rough. Only fight of the year for Rakic, and this is how it goes. Not looking good. I'm bumping him down to 10 in the rankings. And I think a name like Johnny Walker is going to be next. I think a name like Alonzo Menifield, dare I say Dominic Reyes, is going to be next. Just kind of a sad fall off for Alexander Rakic. But once you start falling, I mean, look at BJ Penn, Tony Ferguson. Once you start falling, you really never stop. It just keeps going and going. So Rakic, going to need to take some time off, come back mid, I'd say maybe May, April 2026, actually, and try and turn it around because, man, rough going for him in this one. But Flowers, Aslan Mirzakhanov, I thought he would get done. Might I add to you guys is that he landed 3 significant strikes. One was a punch before the knockout. One was the actual knockout punch. One was the follow-up punch. Like, so this dude has so much power. He's also 36. I love Azamat Mirzakhanov. Next up, heavyweight division, Alexander Volkov, Halt Almeida. Now, was it a robbery? I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, ooh, the fans lost this one because, you know, I think everyone thought Almeida won, but they decided to not reward grappling in this one. They rewarded striking, and Alexander Volkov defeats Halt Almeida. Good stuff. Honestly, deserved at the end of the day. Halt Almeida, 9 significant strikes landed, 7 takedowns. I mean, this dude landed less significant strikes. Actually, 27 total strikes, might I add you. So even less than you would think. Didn't attempt a significant strike in round one. He just went for a takedown, landed it, and just held him there, which Volkov then reversed around, and he started landing 38 total strikes. Round two, that's a Halt Almeida round. 3 takedowns, 4.5 minutes of control time. That's a Halt Almeida round. Round 3, I felt like it was also a Halt Almeida round, but Volkov was the only one landing shots from his back. 77 total strikes, 17. And they reward the basically just ground and pound from his back opposed to the top control of Almeida. So Almeida, 11 minutes of ground control time in a 3-round fight, and he loses. Just hilarious. Honestly, but this corrects the wrongs of Alexander Volkov losing the split decision to Ciryl Gane at UFC 310. So kind of full circle moment for Alexander Volkov here. He moves a 39-11 on his career. So win number or fight number 50 goes his way. Very nice work for him. As for Halt Almeida, I mean, dude, they might cut him. I kid you not. I don't think they're actually going to cut him because he could definitely beat a lot of guys. But who's he going to be taking on next? You know, kind of tough. He's ranked number 5. We do have a number 6 and a number 9 matchup coming up this upcoming week with Waldo Cortez Acosta and Ante Deleje. I would say the winner of that could potentially take on Halt Almeida. But other than that, there's really no way to break Halton in. In my honest opinion, I would like to see Halton versus Walter Walker, but I we could make that. For no reason, we could do Walter Walker versus Halt Almeida, but I just don't think that Walter Walker wants to fight up in the rankings for some reason, which is comical. So we'll see where the career goes for Halt Almeida, but Volkov plus 145 gets it done. He's ranked number 2. He'll remain number 2, but sadly, when we talk about this heavyweight main event, division's on a holdup. I think the heavyweight division is actually cursed. I was actually thinking to myself about this, and I just don't know what to do. He could either rematch Sergey Pavlovich at number 3, rematch Curtis Blaydes at number 4, or take on the winner of Waldo Cortez Acosta and Sergey Spivak, or Waldo Cortez Acosta and Ante Deleje. So Volkov is either going to be rematching or fighting someone in Waldo Cortez Acosta or Ante Deleje, depending on how that fight goes, who might not be deserved of a big shot. But Volkov wins, remains at number 2. This fight destroyed the vibe, let me tell you that. But an oddly entertaining grapple fest between Umar Nurmagomedov and Mario Bautista. 30-27s across the board for Umar, but Mario Bautista is legit, guys. Don't for a second think he is not legit, because he earned his stripes in this contest. 32 significant strikes to 20 in favor of Umar. 81 total strikes to 33 in favor of Umar. Umar goes 11 of 14 on takedowns for just under 11 minutes of control time. Insane. Really was. Now, Mario Batista showing the heart of just a dog here. I mean, round one, gets out grappled, fighting his way back to his feet, trying to stay in it. Round two, drops him with a beautifully timed knee. I thought he had him. I thought Umar was getting knocked out there. He dropped him, but Umar immediately pops back up. He has that UFC eSports 5 animation pop back up when you get knocked down, and is then able to win the round through his grappling. Crazy. Round three, Mario lands some big shots on the feet, but Umar trading with him, landing 7 takedowns. I mean, it was like taking him down. Mario gets back up. He's throwing knees to him. He's taking him down. This was entertaining. This was great, and it really showed that both these guys are so high level, but Umar in at number 2 in the rankings. To be honest, if I'm actually looking at the bantamweight rankings, Umar is tied with Pirion at 2. Pirion is fighting for the belt, but I would confidently put Umar over Sean O'Malley, who's ranked number 1, in my humble opinion. I think we need to run Sean O'Malley, Corey Sandhagen. I think that fight needs to happen, and Umar might as well just fight the winner of Merab and Pirion. I think the only guy that's beaten the winner of that is Umar Nurmagomedov, because let's be real, we're all picking Merab to beat Pirion. The whole block's picking Merab, and so far in the career of Merab, the closest man I've seen to beating him was earlier in the year in January, Umar Nurmagomedov. But I think he might have gotten a bit injured, may need some time, but mind you, he lost his first fight to Merab in a fight of the night earlier this year, 48-47 across the board. He's also 19-1. Umar, still a stud, still only 29 years old, and he gave that Brandon Moreno. I was going to say, you know what, he gave that Brandon Moreno post-fight speech. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but one day I will be champion. I promise you that. And honestly, I believe him. Dude, I believe him. So Umar, great work. I don't know if I really want him to have another shot so soon, though. I'm just a little worried. So if he does want to pick me up fight, Sean O'Malley's right there. Song Yedong's right there. Lots of options. But as for Mario Bautista, his 8-fight winning streak does end, but his stock goes up. So what do we do next with him? He's ranked at number 9. To be honest, I would move him past Marlon Vera. Like, I'd move him past him in the rankings, if I'm being honest. But Davison Figueiredo, in at number 6, picked up a kind of a win, win over Montel Jackson. I think Figgy and Batista run it 2026. I could even do that in a Apex main event, if I'm being honest. I'd love that more on a pay-per-view, but I got Mario Bautista beating a good amount of people in the top 10. I'd certainly say Henry Cejudo and Peyton Talbot, whoever wins that. I'm picking Mario Bautista, Mario versus Vera. I'm going Mario. Amin Zahabi versus Bautista. I'm going with Bautista. Bautista versus Figgy. I'm going Bautista. So once you get into the top 5, it gets a bit tricky. But this was a fun fight, good mix-up, and good win for Umar Nurmagomedov. Then we got into the co-main event, and I was torn all day who to pick. And I eventually went with the woman that I was rooting for in the fight. That is Mackenzie Dern. And Mackenzie Dern is your new women's strawweight champion. And for some reason, people were hating on her. I was so confused with the response on social media. People were like, she's not the real champion. She doesn't deserve it. And I was like, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about? We don't do double champions now, you know. So we needed someone to stand in for Zhang Weili. Because if Zhang Weili wins the women's flyweight championship, she's going to defend it against Natalia Silva or Amanda Fiora. Or she could even run it back with Valentina Shevchenko. We have no idea the next time we're going to see Zhang Weili at strawweight. And we need a champion. And that champion is Mackenzie Dern. And I saw this one account, one of my favorite accounts, MMA Theory, saying it should have been Tatiana Suarez. Do you remember how awful Tatiana looked against Zhang Weili? She grappled her in round one, and after that, faded so fast. So I'm happy Mackenzie Dern is going from rank number 5 to the champion. I'm very hyped with that. And Virginia Doba really showed heart in this one. You know, scorecards 49-46, 48-47, 48-47, I agree with them. You know, how I had it going, round one was a tosser. I went with Virna, 2 takedowns. Round two, I went with Mackenzie Dern because Virna Jandidoba landed 9 takedowns, landed 9 minutes of control time. But the other day, whenever she took down Dern, she couldn't really engage her because Dern had such good jiu-jitsu. And at times, she would even stand back up. Very odd. Round three came around. I gave that to Dern. Round four, I, you know, 50-50. I gave it to Virna just for the kick of it. And round five, a Mackenzie Dern round. Just a dogfight. End of the day, 118 significant strikes, 106. 249 total strikes to 208 in favor of Dern. 2 of 8 on takedowns for Dern. 9 of 17 for Virna. And just a dogfight. And you know what I loved about this is we knew, and both these women knew, going into round 5, it was 50-50. Whoever won round 5 would have won that fight. Notice those two 48-47 scorecards. And you know, whoever won that round was going to win the fight. They both fought like it was this round had to be won. So very happy with that. And Virna Jandidoba my stock's risen with her. You know, before this, the five-fight win streak had been dull. It had been boring. But now, I'm kind of excited to see her throw down. So, next up for Mackenzie Dern is finding someone to defend the belt against. And as of right now, we don't have anyone. We really don't. So, if... did Tatiana Suarez pick up a win? Did she... Oh, she beat Amanda Lemos. Oh, I didn't even remember that. So, Tatiana Suarez can get one more shot to win the belt against Mackenzie Dern, perchance. And as for Vera Jandidoba, who has she not fought yet? Has she fought Lupi Godinez? I don't think so. Has she? Let's double check. She did beat her in 2024, so we could run that back. We also got Yasmin Lucindo ranked at number 7, just kind of browsing real quick. She picked up a win over Angela Hill, so Vera Jandidoba has some options, but yeah, great win for Mackenzie Dern. Happy for these ladies, and yeah, like I said, for Vera Jandidoba, someone who I had low stock on coming in, I now have high stock on. So good work to these ladies. Little did we know it would be the last entertaining thing of the night, as Shogun and Tom Aspinall is just a disaster. So first off, starting out, you know, back and forth. 30 significant strikes in 27, same for total in favor of Shogun. Shogun was working his jab perfectly in this. And if I'm being honest, guys, this is weird to say. Going into this, I just felt something weird was going to happen. You know, I was feeling like a Shogun win. I was feeling like Tom was going to get re-injured. You could just feel a weird energy around this. And with this ending in no contest, it just made perfect sense. So going back and forth, I mean, this was more competitive than I thought. This wasn't your Tom Aspinall starching of someone. This was Shogun really working the jab. Tom Aspinall putting the pace on him. Tom was even doing this weird spin thing where he like faked a spin kick that he like dapped up Shogun. He was really overreaching but landing. So precision overreaching, if you will, which I guess would be successful. And then Shogun was warned for eye pokes, you know, and then he pokes Tom Aspinall in the eye. And it didn't look bad at first, but then upon review, we learned it was bad. And, you know, Tom just had this concerned look on his face. And eventually he had this, like, they got the cloth in on his eye, and they gave him the full 5 minutes, and just wasn't getting better. And they call it. And, you know, the crowd starts booing Aspinall. Aspinall's literally like, guys, why are you booing me? I can't see out of my eye. Shogun is literally defeated on his knees in the octagon because, to be fair, he had been fighting a perfect fight, and the fight only lasted 4 minutes, 35 seconds. Like, we legit have nothing to go off of. It was even. Gon did bust up the nose of Aspinall, but it looked like pretty much just the first jab landing caught him, and his nose was just bleeding. Nothing was, like, broken or, like, cut or anything. And then, eventually, the replays went more in-depth. We learned that one eye was raked with the finger, another one the finger went in. Crowd starts booing Gon, and just a disaster. Just an utter disaster. So, man, Tom Aspinall's stock is at an all-time low now. Dude can't catch a break. He really cannot catch a break. But I do want to say that Tom Aspinall, the last time this happened with Curtis Blaydes, he came back a year later and starched his opponent in Marcin Tybura. And to be fair, he fought Curtis Blaydes again in that same year, or 2024, and starched him. But as for Shogun, like, might I add, his last fight in 2024, a bogus split decision, which a lot of people didn't think he won. I did, because I was biased towards him. But, I mean, yeah, pretty nuts, pretty crazy, and Dana White was not happy. Dana White was saying he could have continued, which just made it all the funnier. But we got to run this back. So we got to run this back, and this is really going to be your January or February headliner. I kid you guys not. They want to get this going. I don't know if December's possible. I really don't, because if Tom Aspinall actually has eye issues, because he's kind of milking it, I can't lie, he seems to be milking it, but he might not be. You know, I'm a defender of him, to be fair. I'm just wondering when we do this, because 2020, you know, UFC 323, I think could use this. I know we have two telefights on there, but UFC 323, it's like, hey, you haven't fought this year? Get on here. So I think we could definitely do that with this matchup. Other than that, I mean, it's getting loaded. We're getting loaded in 2026. When I look at the current championship slate, Volk is looking to get active. Volk wants to fight early next year, whether it's Ivlov, whether it's Lopez, whether it's Murphy. Then you have Ia Topura versus Patty, Ia Topura versus Justin Gaethje. They want to run that. You're also going to have Hamzat Chimaev. We want to get Hamzat Chimaev involved. So I also am curious with Alex Pereira, because the winner of this would have really implemented what we do with Alex Pereira. So there is a possibility out there where Alex Pereira vacates light heavyweight championship, I would not be mad at all, moves up to heavyweight, fights Alexander Volkov, similar to what he did with Jan Blachowicz. He then takes on the winner of Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. And by the way, if Volkov beats Pereira, that would be such a solid win. So that's what I do in an ideal world, but it's tough to talk about an ideal world, especially when we're having no contests. And yeah, people are calling this the worst pay-per-view of the year. And, you know, after having the success that was UFC 320, the best of the year, UFC 321 is obviously much worse. But UFC 312, the trenches will never forget UFC 312. That one was actually the worst. But let's to be fair. All right, we had a great heel hook. We had two amazing fights on the prelims. We had the knockout of the year, a great knockout from Azamat Mirzakhanov. We had the inner tank fight between Umar and Mauro Bautista. And to be fair, I kind of liked the women's strawweight fight. I thought it was the second best women's title fight of the year. You know, so interesting stuff. But yeah, we'll move on. We'll keep it going. And hopefully UFC 322 does not disappoint. But I'm very doubtful UFC 322 is going to disappoint because it's probably going to be the best of the year. But we got some Apex events to get through before that. Next up, David Onama takes on Steve Garcia in a featherweight main event. And also on that card, Waldo Cortez Castanante de Leje, which actually has some interesting implications now. But other than that, it is a piss poor Apex card. It is rough. It is really rough. To be fair, Kellen Vieira and Norma Dumont are literally the number two or number three and number four women's bantamweights on the planet, and they're the fourth fight in on the prelims on like a 13-fight card. That's ridiculous. After this card, we then head to the Apex one more time in November for Gabriel Bonfim versus Randy Brown, and that card is still being built, so I have no idea what to expect, if I'm being honest. It is pretty crazy times in the UFC, but yeah, UFC 321 ends on a sour note, but we look ahead to the future for brighter days. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll send you all on your way. As you can tell, the NFL was not kind to me. No, the NFL was not kind to me at all, but as for the UFC, it is always kind to me. But yeah, Chicago's been a blast. It's been a great time, still getting adjusted to things, still trying to work on my first job, my first big boy job, and yeah, making a lot of friends. It's a good time in the life of Zachary Ruger. But with that, I'll send you all on your way. This was a fun time getting back into it with another episode. We'll be back later in the week. We got Saturday night's main event to preview. I guess I'll drop my week 9 NFL predictions, I guess. And I'm thinking, since the NFL season is just about the halfway point, either on the next episode or one of the next three for sure, we're going to look at the current state of positions for fantasy football. You know, okay, I'm caving for the NFL still, but yeah, and of course UFC galore coming down the stretch. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, have an amazing week. Make the best time of your lives, and you already know what I'm going to say. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jeb Podcast.